afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, July 26th, 2017. Wendy Wilson will be joining us in just a few short moments. We'll first do the market report, and I must say hello, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hello, Al. Hello, Alfred. Well, hello. Anyway, we're saying hello to gold today, or I would say gold is saying hello to higher prices, a great push-up at the last, I'd say the last hour of the day. It was a little pressure most of the day, and we're up 11:30 on gold right now at 1261.90. Silver's up 17 cents at 1675. Platinum is up 3 at $933. Palladium's up 10 at $875. I don't know. I hear music in the background. I don't know if it's coming from the station, from the producer. If he's listening to the program. Do you hear it, Al?
Yes, I do.
All right. So
it has stopped, though.
So we went through the precious metals. We do have USDX today, a little pressure on that, down 0.53 at 93.54. Crude oil was up 0.73 at 48.62. Paper markets today, after Janet Yellen came out and said what everyone expected her to say, the Dow was up over 100 points at one point. It fell back a little bit, not much, 96. Up 96 points at 21,709. The NASDAQ is up 10, 6,422. The S&P basically unchanged at 2477. 10-year yield down 0.04 at 2.28%. And the euro was up big, 0.69 at 117. And we'll talk about the fear index. We're going to talk about what Janet Yellen, what she said in her statement today, and a lot of other things. But first, we have 20 minutes, the first segment of the program today dedicated to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody, and thank you. And hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about, you know, the symptom checker software that's online, because millions of people are actually checking their symptoms online now, and they compare treatment options. So according to scientific medicine, if you do that, you're a symptom checker. And they also say you run the risk of getting the wrong information. Now, artificial intelligence is actually based on a lot of the technology already being used on the internet, and we're told that human physicians will diagnose better than the algorithms used online. So you want to keep in mind that men of science are programming the artificial intelligence, the diagnostic robots, and they're only going to be as good as the information that's uploaded. So where does this information come from? Well, it comes from medical doctors who technically admit they tend to misdiagnose a patient once per month. So artificial intelligence has programs which are loaded with a lot of human error. So according to the National Center for Policy Analysis, misdiagnosis has a 20% occurrence and exceeds the drug and surgery errors, and this is in medicine. However, we're given these mixed messages lately that the robots that will be coming out will eliminate all this error and will outperform the flesh and blood physicians, or do we believe human physicians outperform artificial intelligence? And should patients or people stop researching their options online and doing symptom checking? So we thought we'd look into that a little today. Do you do any symptom checking, Al?
I look in the mirror once in a while, and that's probably as far as my symptom checking goes.
Okay. How about you, Melody?
As long as I have breath on that mirror, I'm good.
Okay. Well, according to a Harvard study in 2015 at the School of Medicine, they conducted this study if symptom checkers get accurate information. Now, no surprise, they stated online sites offering symptom analysis get it wrong most of the time. Their study got published in the British Medical Journal in 2015. So you have to ask yourself, well, who's hosting the checking sites? Well, who supposes hosting the sites? And actually, it's Modern Medicine and its affiliates that are hosting these symptom checker sites. So medical schools like Harvard host them, hospital systems, insurance companies, and also government agencies will host these sites. Now, in the UK, now, the government there, they have their National Healthcare Service there, so they're all socialized. But they have symptom checking services, which are supported and maintained by their healthcare system. Now, their software over there will ask you to plug in your symptoms by checking off a checklist. And once you've answered the questions, the software will spit you out a potential, you know, diagnosis or if immediate medical attention is required. Now, the medical robots in development will do the same, but they may also be empowered to provide you a prescription. Now, it's doubtful that robots like that will need malpractice insurance. However, the company providing the robot and the database of information would need some sort of protection. So therefore, people in the future, if you're symptom checking, if you're using online sources, you want to be on your guard. You may be required to agree to waive your rights prior to a diagnosis being given in the event the robot gets it wrong. So we have to wonder, if human doctors outperform the computers and online algorithms, why is scientific medicine sponsoring them? Any ideas?
Why are they sponsoring the robots, or why are they sponsoring the doctors?
Yeah, why? I mean, you know, if they're telling us, you know, online checking is not going to help you much, you know, hello, why are they hosting them?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That is a good question.
Somebody's making a buck off of it. That's what that has to be the answer.
Okay, well, you know, according to the Harvard study, medical students are given the task of programming the symptom checker software that you're using online. Yep, the symptom checker software was first developed to help teach medical students. So the software algorithms search for the correct diagnosis, and in the Harvard study, the software was correct about 34% of the time, they said. So the top three diagnoses were usually given, they were projected to be accurate about 51% of the time, the top three diagnoses. And then the top 20 possible diagnoses they projected as being correct 58% of the time. So this Harvard report states that the symptom checker software, very conservative, are going to recommend you seek medical attention. And they also listed who other than people like you and me are using the symptom checker software. Do you want to take a guess?
Well, I don't know. I don't have a guess for that.
Healthcare professionals are using it.
Healthcare professionals are using it.
Researchers are using it. This is all the stuff that's being programmed by the medical students. Some examples of symptom checkers are your netdoctor.co.uk, that's over in the UK, WebMD, big one here in America.com, MayoClinic.org, and also the American Academy of Pediatrics. So they're all hosting these type of symptom checkers. Here is a quote from Hannah Samarigan, Harvard Medical School. She says, the symptom checker tools are not likely to go away as we are looking at the first generation of this technology. It's important to continue to track performance and see if they can reach their full potential in helping patients get the right care. Well, Harvard revisited this whole thing in last year in 2016. They wanted to look at these symptom checker applications like another time, and they said that the doctors still outperform the artificial intelligence with accuracy. They said human doctors, lifeblood breathing ones, will outperform and be accurate with a then compared to the symptom checker about 72% of the time. So your human doctors get it right 72% of the time, whereas your symptom checker software gets it right 34% of the time. So they get published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and they say real physicians outperform the computer algorithms, okay? And since human doctors misdiagnose 20% of the time, this suggests that your doctor kiosk or your artificial intelligence is going to misdiagnose 40% of the time. And the primary components of misdiagnosing are failure to recognize a disease, diagnosis is not given in a timely manner, complexity of uncommon conditions, as well as lack of information, and also cognitive mistakes or shortcuts, which usually human doctors do by playing the odds or making assumptions. Now, Ativ Mahorra, associate professor at Harvard, says clinical diagnosis is currently as much an art as it is science, end of quote. What do you think of that?
I agree with him 100%, and I have a hunch what the problem might be. If you do your own diagnosis on the computer, I don't think you're going to be plugged into a blood pressure machine. I don't think you're going to have access to the medical devices, the analytical devices that you can get from a doctor's office, at least not right now, not so far. And I think there's another problem. When someone asks any of us how serious our problems are, I think we tend, out of vanity perhaps, we tend to diminish, we diminish, I got a little problem. The doctor can look and see, no, you got a big problem. He may be able to overcome our vanity, if you catch my drift. Does that make any sense to you, Wendy?
Actually, it's been reported that patients don't tell their doctors everything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. And for whatever reasons, but you know, but there's going to be another generation of this artificial intelligence. It's called the professor system. Okay, so this system is going to go beyond these old algorithm models, and also going to involve clinical professionals as a backup. Okay, so for whatever reason, some patients may not want to tell their doctors everything. This is going to have a system that includes a clinical professional, maybe ask some questions out of experience that may not be programmed into the software. So this system is going to understand that patients will also have some knowledge of what's going on, since they probably self-diagnosed a little bit online. But modern medicine is now playing this catch-up game, trying to combine or implement all this knowledge from all these facets to resolve errors and also the decision-making complexity for a timely and correct as possible diagnosis. Now, hey, if you've ever been out there, I used to work in a hospital. I worked in intensive care for a number of years, and I've personally experienced several physicians disagreeing on a diagnosis on even the simplest of a condition. For instance, one time it involved this wart on top of an index finger. Okay, the debate was, it's not a wart, it's a cyst, and blah blah blah. So I don't know, for some reason skin masses tend to send attending physicians in intensive care into this tailspin. It was surprising, but actually it turned out to be a seed wart that you couldn't cut or freeze off. It just grows back. So what resolved it was garlic topically on top of the wart, because a wart is a virus.
And a wart garlic is a virus.
Yeah, and garlic is antiviral. So in another instance, there was these ENT physicians called in. They couldn't agree on an ear infection a patient had for 3 months. And this was an adult. They debated over, there was three of these guys debating, no, it's bacteria, no, it's fungus, no, it's a yeast infection. No antibiotic, no steroid was touching this thing until garlic was put into the ear, and it resolved it in 2 days. That's because garlic's very broad spectrum. It's antiviral, bacterial, fungal, and yeast. So garlic's pretty cool. But getting back to our you know, self-diagnosing, if we're on there doing our symptom checker. Actually, according to the Association for Psychological Science, 60% of Americans are getting their self-diagnosis on Google. Initially, that's where they start. So according to their research, Google has played this big role in this age of self-diagnosing. So in a 2012 report, they said more people search for symptoms of cancer, and they reported that the sites will vary on symptoms listed for specific cancers, such as thyroid cancer. So their team showed some concern that symptom checkers may delay medical screening and disease, such as cancer, and increase the patient risk. But they reported their findings in the Journal of the Psychological Science. And it's interesting, though, that they're worried about risk with cancer diagnosis, because the recent report showed chemotherapy and radiation cause cancer. They don't resolve cancer. So if there aren't any treatments for cancer, I don't know why people would want to seek an oncologist, right?
I mean, I'm interested in whether the second whether the robot's opinion can be viewed as a second doctor's opinion. Does it create any legal liability for the the living doctor? He says, "Well, I think you've got this." What if the robot says, "No, you got this.
You have a different
problem." And what if the robot turns out to be right?
Yeah,
what we have a basis for a lawsuit.
I don't know. Well, the thing is, I started thinking about that. Why is science pushing this technology in the diagnosis area? Well, my guess it may be at some point to reduce some liability somehow. So if patients understand that they're taking their chances using this technology in a medical science setting, then insurance companies, hospitals, maybe even other affiliations can sidestep a lot of litigation. The other end would be maybe this automation will reduce the need to fill jobs with people and save money and payroll and benefits and loss of production and all that stuff. I always tend to follow the money.
Well, yeah. I agree.
So
you'll never get lost if you're following the money trail. You
know? Yeah. Well, now the Bible says in the latter days, people are going to run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased. That's in Daniel chapter 12. But knowledge does not always mean truth. Therefore, you know, we can use the tools that we have to seek truth, and also I pray for God's wisdom, but verifying the information is really everybody's responsibility. So if you seek truth, God says you're going to find it. And he also said, herbs are meat, they're for the service of man and for the healing of the nations. Now that's listed from Genesis to Revelation, so that's a whole lot of truth and wisdom spanning thousands of years. So every good thing comes from God. So I really depend on herbs more and more each and every year. So people want to learn how they can do that to encourage balance and restoration in their system that has been ailing for years and medications hasn't touched it. Hey, maybe it's time to change the game plan. Call the folks at Apothecary Herbs. They do have a free catalog to send you at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. Of course, the website has information as well, thepowerherbs.com.
You're going to have to work on your clock.
I do. I have
We have another 40 seconds to go here, and I do have a question for you.
Okay.
Is there such a thing as an artificial intelligence robot that will diagnose problems that can be addressed with herbs?
I don't think medicine's going to be putting that one out.
Agree with that.
No. It's the thing is herbs are in direct competition to petrochemical pharmaceuticals.
I understand.
So I don't think so. I think you're just going to have to do your homework the old-fashioned way there.
All right. All right, Wendy, thanks very much. Give us this is Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Look forward to talking to you again next Wednesday. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, with silver up 17 cents today and gold up 11, I'm going to continue with the two little packages that I have. The both silver packages of $50, face value of 90% 50-cent pieces, Kennedy's and Franklin's. So it's a 50-50, $50 face value, 50-cent pieces, $645. That includes your shipping costs and, of course, the 20, 20, and 20. The 21-ounce American Silver Eagles, the 21-ounce Buffalo Rounds, and the $20 face value of 50-cent pieces for a total of $1,015. And that, too, includes your shipping costs. So silver's up big today, up over 1%, so you're saving a minimum of 1% just from yesterday's price. So, and it was already discounted, I believe, from the day before. So a great special. We still have a few of these left. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And we were going to talk about the Feds. The Feds are keeping interest rates steady. It's a typical, their one worry is inflation, and that has fallen below 2% for three consecutive months. So they're going to be monitoring inflation developments very closely. So silly that their statements. They don't expect, and I think the take of this was, I don't think there's going to be a rate hike anymore this year. One could come December, but with the job markets, you know, might be getting a little weaker. Who knows what will happen by the end of this year. And so, and again, they made the announcement that they would relatively soon begin shrinking what's known as the balance sheet. And it's the vast amounts of treasury and mortgage-backed securities that they've purchased during the crisis, just trying to stimulate the economy. So I don't think there was any surprises, and therefore you had all the markets jump considerably. And gold jumped big the last hour of trade. We had a little bit of pressure on the dollar. So it was kind of a mixed trading after the announcement. So not quite sure what we'll see tomorrow, but I think we're going to continue to see stronger and stronger gold and silver prices.
Well, I hope you're right.
I usually am, Al. Mm-hmm. If you haven't taken notice, I usually am right. And the fear index, too, is something a little bit, it briefly dropped below 9. The fear index, Wall Street's fear index, briefly dropped below 9 to a record low. And that came right after the Fed released its statement. Stocks rose after the statement. They didn't recover all intraday highs that were earlier in the session. The VIX dropped to 8.84.
And which that means that people are almost completely unafraid.
Unafraid. That dropped at 201. And the announcement by the Fed was 2 p.m. Eastern time. And it dipped below 9 at 201. So it only took a minute for it to dip.
You think that. Now, how do they do that? All right, how can they run that survey? I don't know. I mean, you would think that if they're going to determine the fear index, you would suppose that at least they're talking to some people. They got somebody out on the street. They send Jay Leno out there. He's doing the, you know, the jaywalking skit or whatever, and say, well, are you fearful or are you not fearful, or more or less. How do they find out what happened in a minute? Now, I know they're not actually interviewing people. They're using...
they use options.
They're using statistics and whatever, but still, doesn't that sound a little strange? Janet Yellen talks for a couple of minutes, and within a minute of that, of the end of that, we see a statistical difference in the market that tells us that the fear index has dropped to almost a record low.
It was a record low.
It is a record low. Right? So far, it's a record low. Still, there is something about this. It may be exactly right, but it strikes me as suspicious. We're going to say all of these people out there, they have just lost their fear. That's the implication. But we're not really talking to people. We're looking at how people invest. And it's an indirect measurement. I don't know. You know, it's just surprising to me. It's something that does not necessarily compute.
Well, everyone knows that with this, you know, low that we've seen to the VIX, and everybody sees what's going on around them, the two aren't meshing. Everybody knows the volatility is here and coming. So there should be extreme fear. Yes, there's a lot of greed when you have record highs in the stock markets. Yeah, you're going to have greed, and greed, the greed index did pop up over 80 today, which in relationship to the VIX, you would see a low. But a managing director at KKM Financial said the drop in the VIX to a record low was the result of option traders reducing what they were willing to bid for S&P 500 options ahead of the Fed's statement. And the key thing is, it's summer. Volumes are low. And, you know, you can do a lot when volumes are low. You can move markets. It's easy, and you'll see these big reflections when you have low volumes.
Well, the other point is we're dealing again with the VIX as another economic indicator, and we have to wonder, given that there's evidence to suggest that most, if not all, of our economic indicators are manipulated to some degree, you got to wonder, is the VIX real? Or is it more manufactured statistics?
No, I think it's based on trading, and it's based on certain criteria that they use. And yes, you will see. I mean, the VIX last rose above 20 on November 9th, the day after the presidential election. What's changed? And that's even when I talked the other day about having a family friend this weekend, financial planner. I mean, they're totally puzzled that the VIX is as low, and that these are all signs that there isn't anything that's true or real. There's no reality to anything. Just like we know the paper markets, there's no reality to the fundamentals that support the level that the Dow is at, that the S&P is at, that the NASDAQ is at. The same reason that there's no reason gold shouldn't be $5,000 and $6,000 today, based on everything that's just not going on in this country, but also around the world. And all this tells me, when you have all these abnormal relationships, the day of reckoning is almost here. it's approaching very quickly. And I think this is why you see all these distortions in when at least you should have some sort of follow-through somewhere, you know, to confirm that, yeah, this is this number because of this, or maybe this is, you know, but there isn't anything. And again, it's like that ant's nest that's just stirred up and you have ants scurrying everywhere. That's what it reminds me of. There, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to a lot of these numbers. There's no rhyme and reason for
that's what I'm trying to say.
There's no rhyme because it's all illusions. It's all rigged. It's all fake. It's all phony. This was the illusion that they created.
You have to look at things yourself, and you wind up put in a position where you either have to go along with what may be propaganda, or you have to rely on your own ability to individually perceive what's happening in the market. I look at this, and I mean, the VIX number is down low, low, low. I'm wondering what they're smoking. And I'm sure they're wondering what I'm smoking. And it's another one of these things that we see great polarization in the political system between the Republicans and the Democrats. This is evidence of a kind of polarization in the economic system, where some people are concerned that we are on the verge of some very serious problems. And if you can believe these reports, the majority of people disagree completely. I think this thing is, they think our economy is going strong and it's going to go stronger. And there's no reason for concern. This isn't just a little, you know, I think one says tomato and one says tomato. We're talking about one says tomato and one says pineapple or cucumber or something else. I mean, we have a significant difference here, and it's hard to resolve that and say, okay, who is most likely to be right?
But you can look at, there are, I guess you could say there are some fundamentals. I mean, we've had a diet of low rates to stimulate the economy, but yet it doesn't show that the economy has really worked, because we're still looking at a 2% GDP. And now they're beginning to unwind the so-called stimulus purchases to get
there. They say they're going to unwind.
They say they're going to unwind.
We'll see.
But these are some of the fundamentals that tells us, if you care to, you know, read and do a little research, that not all is as glorious as the high prices of the stock markets. But yet that is the leading indicator for the GDP, the generally dumb public, to say, hey, that number's high, I'm good. I don't have to read. I don't have to research. I don't have to question. Because as long as those numbers are high, everything's okay. That means my retirements are secure. Means I'm going to be able to go to the doctor when I retire. I'm going to, you know, maybe travel the world when I. This is their thinking. It's as long as those numbers are high, and it's going to be difficult to have high gold prices, because they conflict. The gold versus the stock is a conflicting number, but so you're going to see one of them break. You're going to see gold break out, and you're going to see the stock markets break down.
Got an article here from Stansberry Research, and I'm only reading a paragraph or two from the article. The title of the article is, "This Will Lead to a Panic Unlike Any We've Ever Seen." I'm not really getting into much of the article, just the introduction. And it says, "A historic mania has developed in the world's bond markets. Central banks have pushed so much new money into bonds in an effort to manipulate interest rates lower that corporate bonds have begun trading with negative yields, meaning corporations are now being paid to borrow. This, as you might realize, makes absolutely no sense. Sooner or later, it's going to cause catastrophic problems with the world economy, perhaps even the collapse of the entire financial system." Now, what rings my bell is they're saying, with negative interest rates, right? Meaning, this means that corporations are now being paid to borrow. And they go on and they say, as you might realize, this makes absolutely no sense. Well, I know from a conventional perspective, yeah, I agree that it makes no sense, but I've talked, for the last month or 6 weeks, something like that, I've been exploring the idea that our debt-based monetary system must go deeper into debt. That is not an option. We must go at least in as far as deep into debt as they were going in, under the Obama administration. And I suspect that the way the system really works is the debt must increase by multiples. All right. If Obama went into debt another $8 or $9 trillion while during his administration, I think we may have to go into debt. If I'm correct on this, it's a hypothesis, it's speculation. We don't know that I'm right. Could be wrong about this, but I suspect that for us to hold this economy together, given that it's based on debt, it is a debt-based monetary system. It is a debt-based economy. I strongly suspect that they're going to have to, if they don't go $8 or $9 trillion deeper into debt during the Trump administration, I think the whole thing may collapse. And I think they may have to go more than $8 or $9 trillion. That's a suspicion. Well, maybe it's true and maybe it's false, but if it were true, then when they say that with negative interest rates mean that corporations are being paid to borrow, and they say that makes absolutely no sense, it does make sense in the context of the hypothesis I've been advancing, where I'm saying, look, I think they must go into debt. That is not an option. They must go deeper and deeper into debt, and it is consistent with paying corporations to borrow. Negative interest rates, meaning that corporations are now being paid to borrow. It makes sense. They need more debt. Here, let me give you $500 if you will go ahead and go into debt for another $10,000. They need that debt. Now, this is not proof that my little theory is valid, but it was another bit of evidence that you look at it, and for me at least, I said, well, I don't know, maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm right. Maybe the hypothesis is correct. And well, why are we paying people to borrow? It says, they say it makes absolutely no sense, but it really does in the context of a debt-based monetary system. It makes no sense in the context of an asset-based monetary system where we have gold or silver and we're not based on promises to pay, but actual payments. We have assets. It makes no sense in terms of gold and silver based monetary system, but debt-based, yeah, we're going to pay people to go deeper into debt because we've got to have more debt to sustain the system. Theory. Maybe yes, maybe no.
Corporate bonds going negative isn't a new phenomenon. They've been doing it for the past couple of years. Yeah. I mean, it's been, and the reason is people are looking for a place, and they think corporations are safer than governments. So they're willing to park their money someplace, just like you wonder, well, why do people park their money with governments and get negative rates? Because they're scared of losing, and I guess they don't mind losing, 1% or 2% versus losing, 80% of it.
But that's real interesting against this VIX number we were just talking about. On the one hand, you're describing people that are fearful. On the other hand, the VIX number says no, they are without fear. What's the truth of the matter?
Well, let's just talk about corporate bond, the rate.
Well, let's talk about it when we get back. We have to take a couple of commercials right now, and we'll talk about corporate bonds when we return on Financial Survival. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value. value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners of our specials today. $50 face value of 50 cent pieces, $645. And then we also have the 2020 special, 21 ounce silver eagles. And those are 2017s for the year. 21 ounce American silver rounds. Those are the buffaloes. And $20 face value of the 50 cent pieces. And that's $1,015. And the $17 or the 17 cent increase for the silver today has not been incorporated into this price. So you get an automatic 1% savings from yesterday's price. 1-800-375-4188.
Did you have anything else you wanted to add about corporate bonds?
No, I just wanted to say that isn't new. It's been going on. You know, I don't know when it first showed up, 2014, 2015, or something like that, and don't know if it had happened prior to that. But it's just a signal, again, just how messed up these markets are and what the central banks have done to the monetary policies, just not here in the U.S., but around the globe.
Well, the whole thing is perverted because we have a debt-based monetary system everywhere you go, practically. And one of the things about Iraq, they had a gold-based monetary system before we got into the invasion of Iraq about 2003. Now they have a debt-based monetary system.
They couldn't go to war.
Like Libya.
They couldn't Libya go to war without a fiat currency.
Well, some people believe a fundamental reason for invading Iraq was that they had a gold-based currency.
Well, they were selling their oil, and they were beginning to sell their oil.
Well, I know I said a fundamental reason. I didn't say the. The big problem is they were threatening the supremacy of the dollar because they were all of the oil producing nations, virtually all of them, were selling their crude oil only for dollars. And as long as that was true, it gave the dollar a backing to substitute for the loss of gold backing or silver backing. Right? It was implicitly backed, no longer directly, but it was implicitly backed by crude oil. If you wanted crude oil, and most nations did, you couldn't get it unless you had dollars first to pay for it. And that created a demand for dollars, which gave the dollars, the paper dollars, an apparent value, an apparent worth, and it helped to hold this system together. Is it going to continue? Maybe not. You know, as Iraq threatened the system because Saddam said he was going to sell the Iraqi crude for euros, That was his intent. And he wound up being invaded, and that's probably the main reason he got invaded. He was threatening the fiat dollar, the debt-based monetary system, at least the debt-based dollar. And I think that was probably why he was invaded. And then Libya under Colonel Gaddafi, they were trying to create a pan-African currency that would work for all the nations of Africa, and that would be backed by gold. Right? And they wound up invading Libya, which at the time was the wealthiest country in Africa. And I don't know how popular Colonel Gaddafi was portrayed as a villain, and we've listened to that for a couple of decades, and I'm not arguing that he was or he wasn't. That's not. But they were extraordinarily generous. If you were just married, they gave you a bunch of money. You got a new apartment you could live in. Gasoline was maybe a dime a gallon over in Libya. They shared the wealth from their oil with their people. And it may be that some people were still angry one way or the other, but Libya really had, it was a pretty nice deal. I mean, the whole population was subsidized from what was coming from the oil. And yet they claimed that a civil war erupted, and before it was done, Gaddafi died under gruesome circumstances. He was killed, murdered. And Libya itself was trashed. What had been the wealthiest country in Africa was reduced in a lot of regards to rubble and poverty and violence and whatever. Again, this is evidence to me that the powers that be are willing to go to some considerable lengths, including murder and national destruction and maybe genocide, in order to protect the fiat currencies that the world currently relies on. And premier among those is the fiat dollar. So it's dangerous business to advocate the loss of the a restoration of a gold standard. It's dangerous business to do anything that accomplishes that, and yet it seems to me that it's almost inevitable that sooner or later we're going to have a gold standard again. It seems to me that the fiat dollar, the debt-based monetary system, I think it has to collapse. I think it's inevitable. I don't see any way that they can prevent it, although they may be able to postpone it for another few years, but it has to go down, and when it does, a lot of people say the next currency system will be backed by special drawing rights issued by the International Monetary Fund. And that may be true. But from my perspective, those special drawing rights are nothing but another fiat currency. They're going to come up with, instead of a green paper dollar, they're going to come up with a pink paper dollar. And they're going to say, oh, but this is different because this one is backed by special drawing rights. What are they? Nothing but pieces of paper. More promises to pay. We'll have the pink promises to pay backed by the special drawing rights from the IMF, which are nothing but promises to pay. And I think it's going to fail. I think we're going to, assuming they can implement in the first place, assuming they can get the public to go along and say, oh, we'll support a new fiat currency because this one is pink instead of green. Now, the public may be dumb enough to do that. I don't know if they are or they're not. But I don't believe they can sustain it much for long. And if a second fiat currency is imposed on the United States and the world, when it does fail, second time around, the public will not accept a fiat currency. They might accept two fiat currencies in a row, but if the second one fails, the one based on special drawing rights, I think enough people will have figured it out, and they'll sit back and say, we're not doing this again. We want gold.
But I'll tell you what they will accept. They will accept a check from the government. If they lose 70% or 80% of their funds, and government comes in and says, you know, we're just not going to let that happen to you anymore. The markets are too risky. So we'll take what you have, we'll invest it, and you just make sure. They'll redefine Social Security.
Oh, yeah.
They'll redefine it, and people will agree to it because, you know, that's the biggest statement I hear today. Almost everyone I talk to on an everyday basis, I never thought I'd reach this age and have to worry about my money. We do have to worry about our money. And so when something happens, when the system collapses, they might not accept another fiat currency, but they will accept a check from the government if they don't have to worry about the retirement anymore, and that's just the same as another fiat currency. So
they'll accept,
I don't know,
that check,
I hope,
but the problem is we're going to go into probably hyperinflation in order to wipe out some of the debt. And they can take a check.
Well, yeah,
suppose Social
that,
Security allegedly has $500,000 in your account. All right, let's just suppose that. Well, maybe the government will offer you a check for $500,000. And some people will say, yippee, let's take the money and run. But when you go to cash that check, it'll only have maybe $50,000 in purchasing power as compared to the half the purchasing power of the $500,000 you actually deposited into your Social Security fund. The hyperinflation will effectively wipe out the debt. You'll get $500,000 back out of your account, that's true, but it won't have $500,000 in purchasing power. It might have only $50,000 in purchasing power. One way or another, you know, I've said it for years, what can't be paid won't be paid. They can't pay the debt. They have creative ways to conceal that fact and perhaps bamboozle people into taking a new piece, new and improved piece of paper. But all of those pieces of paper are nothing but promises to pay. A payment, a gold coin, a silver coin is a payment. All of the other payment, all of the other paper debt instruments, whether they are cash or bank accounts or stocks or bonds or pension funds, they are all promises to pay at a time when the world is overrun by promises and they can't all be kept. And it's part of the reason that we advocate on a regular basis, say, look, you don't want those promises. They can't all be paid. I'm not saying the promises you have, the paper promises you have in your particular portfolio, they may work out fine. But I'm guesstimating that the vast majority of the promises to pay, the pieces of paper, are going to turn out to be worthless. And that's why we are recommending that you get away from the paper, get away from the promises to pay. They can't be kept. The promises can't be kept. Get a payment instead of a promise to pay. Get yourself some gold. Get yourself some silver.
What size is California's economy?
Oh, something like fifth in the world, if I understand correctly. And I don't know how many trillion that is.
More than a third of California households have virtually no savings and are at risk of financial ruin. Now, we talk about all the time, oh, you know, the people across this country don't have $400 saved up, they don't have $1,000 saved up, and we're talking about an average across the country. But this is California, in such a large economy, and a third, more than a third, have virtually no savings. More than 37% of California households have so little cash saved that they couldn't live at the poverty level for even 3 months if they had lost a job or suffered another significant loss of income. This was an assessment by the 2017 Prosperity Now Scorecard. It's a Washington, D.C.-based organization. And I think that's kind of interesting. It shows that 46% of households in the Golden State didn't set aside any savings for emergencies over the past year, a higher percentage than the national rate of 43.7%.
But even that national rate is nothing to brag about.
Nothing to brag. But California,
it's like, not like
but
the
you
rest
could
of
average it out.
We
got a lot of poor states and counties and so forth, so you can see the average and so forth. You know, but California, such a small, contained, huge economy, it's pretty bad.
Well, I agree, and it points, you know, if anything breaks loose, it's just evidence that the economy is fragile, vulnerable, and could break at any moment. Doesn't mean that it'll shatter today and be crashed down to zero tomorrow, but we could still see another event much like the Great Recession, and a lot of people think much worse than Great Recession.
Oh, it's going to be, even a sniffle of what, 2008 is a sniffle.
Well, yes, it'll be a sniffle. We'll be sniffling next time, too, and it won't be.
Or are you talking about the 29? Are you talking about the 1929?
No, they'd talk about either one of them. I was referring to 2008, but the next set of sniffles will not be from catching cold. They will be from crying your eyes out, and it will be painful more than likely. We don't know that for an absolute fact, but more than likely that's where we're headed. And even if the next, we could go into another recession where they at least admitted we're in another recession. It could be this year. I could say, oh, gee, we're in another recession. Well, and maybe it doesn't crash and fall down around everyone's head. But we're headed for something that if we go through another recession, there's still another recession and or depression on the other side of that. There's a problem here that is too big to be dealt with. And it's only the reset. They'll tell you there's going to be a reset. Well, yeah, there's going to be a reset. But when we say reset, it sounds like someone very intelligent is going to say, well, we're going to do a little calculations and correct the interest rate and release some of the funds out of the Fed's balance sheet and so on. And then everything will be, it'll be a reset. No, it will be a panic. Right, and, it will be a catastrophe. And they're saying, oh, we're going to have a reset. Oh, we'll watch and see if whatever happens here is as civilized as the word reset sounds. Reset sounds controlled. When this thing really breaks loose, it'll be calamity.
You know, we talk about $20 trillion in debt. Where do you people think that's going? Do you actually think it's going to be lowered? I mean, do you think this economy can survive on $25 trillion? 30 trillion? 40? 50?
Yeah, I know. There's an end to it somewhere.
I mean, are you kidding me? Does anybody have a true idea the amount of money that is? Or the amount of debt
that is? I do,
Melody,
but I'm not going to say because we're out of time. We'll have to worry about how much money that is tomorrow. I hope you'll tune in at that time. I'm in the meantime, the good Lord bless you, ladies and gentlemen in the audience, and me, and Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
Payment sad. And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got